Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hour number two of Darren, Donick, and Chase. Willie Donick, Chase McCabe here with you. Darren on vacation this week. We are keeping our eye on the social media channels, on the television channels, to see if there is any information regarding the Titans. No positive tests for the second straight day, opening the door for perhaps a return to the facility tomorrow. That has not been made official yet, nor has there been any ruling report on did the Titans violate protocols, will there be sanctions, all of that stuff. But Mike Vrabel is scheduled to join the media for a discussion at 12:30. We will have that for you. In the meantime, the NHL draft is tonight, and it will be a lot of fun. We'll have a lot of coverage here on our station. Chase, tell people what you have in store for us tonight.
Yeah, tonight starting at 6, I'll be joined by Justin Bradford of Penalty Box Radio. We will do 3 hours of draft coverage as we take you through the first round and the 11th overall pick to the Nashville Predators. We'll be talking about different trade scenarios. I mean, we know it could be a crazy night with some moves. So we will have you covered, all brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. And it starts at 6 o'clock here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Outstanding. Also, covering the draft for The Athletic, covering the Predators, as he always does, Adam Vingan, and he joins us here on the show. Adam, what's going on?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Doing well.
Long time no see.
Yeah, looking forward to all of the action tonight. And before we get into the strategy of the Predators, I know you've done a lot of analysis. You've looked at all the mock drafts of who might be there, and honestly, I think there's a very small percentage of the Predator fans who really study the top prospects. I mean, they might, the top 10 or 12 players, to get a sense of who they are. We'll get to that. But I think the more compelling thing on draft night sometimes is the wheeling and dealing that teams do. Will there be that big trade that has everybody reacting to it? There's already been a couple to sort of set the table. But do you feel like we're on the verge of a night like that?
Well, if what the insiders are reporting is any indication, then yes. We have heard a lot from people like Elliot Freeman, my colleague at The Athletic, Pierre LeBrun, Bob McKenzie, who has come out of semi-retirement for the NHL draft and free agency, that this is expected to be a wild week. And even some general managers throughout the league have intimated that as well. So one thing that we are going to miss from this virtual NHL draft is just the thrill of watching all 31 management teams on an arena floor within feet of each other, looking into every conversation that every general manager is having with another general manager. Anytime a general manager picks up the phone, speculating who he might be talking to. You know, that's one of the best parts of the actual NHL draft, is watching those conversations and trying to speculate what they could be about. But, you know, that won't be the case this year. The Predators' war room, so to speak, will be at Bridgestone Arena in the team offices. So that is where they will be following the draft over the next couple of days. But, you know, certainly we are being led to believe that there could be a lot of movement in the league, not just in the next couple of days, Tuesday and Wednesday, but with free agency on Friday as well.
it is happening so fast that it does make it fun, because they're, you take what usually happens over the summer in pieces and you throw it all into about a 10-day period where, and we're so fresh off of the Stanley Cup. For example, the Lightning, who just won the whole thing, they've got some key decisions to make, it appears, and that might be something that we see, is some of their guys that have been a part of their nucleus for a long time, they might be willing to move.
Yeah, you know, I look at what the Tampa Bay Lightning are facing. They are going to have some difficult decisions. I believe it was Darren Dreger this morning reporting that Tyler Johnson, who has trade protection, is working with the Tampa Bay Lightning to find a solution for a possible trade. They have a lot of interesting pieces that are going to be made available just because of their cap situation. There are teams just like the Lightning that are really tight to the salary cap and are going to have to make some really difficult decisions. But if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, they will be hard decisions, but you can live with them because it delivered you a Stanley Cup.
Right.
But I am very curious to see what happens there. Also, in the past 10 minutes, two more players have been placed on waivers for buyout purposes. Carl Alzner by the Montreal Canadiens and Justin Abdelkader by the Detroit Red Wings.
Wow. I don't know. I don't know if either of those are people that would have a huge market. There's a reason they're being bought out, but I do think that is something to keep your eye on. When is the last day you can buy somebody out?
I believe it is Thursday. Is the conclusion of the buyout window, the day before free agency.
Okay, so I guess while we're on the subject, do you have a sense of, because we may not know the answer tonight, I would imagine that David Poile is going to continue to do his due diligence, talk to everybody, but if the market doesn't change for Kyle Turris, do you think that that is the end game? Or do you think they would rather keep him and see what happens before they buy him out? Because I do think it's a fair question to ask, and they haven't ruled out either possibility, right?
Right. I would have to imagine that when you look at the centers, and you talked about this with Elliot Freeman last week, when you look at the centers on the free agent market, there really aren't a lot of them. I mean, I think one way to demonstrate that is the fact that there are people reporting on the free agent market who are discussing the Kyle Granlund as a center, even though, as we know, he never played center for the Predators. And near the end of his time in Minnesota, he wasn't playing center either. He has center experience, but he's been a more productive winger, yet people are talking about signing him to potentially be a center. So that's sort of where we are with the center market. So maybe there is some value in Kyle Turris being a natural center, but when you look at that contract, it's just really hard for me to see somebody ponying up something of value for that contract. I mean, and the Predators would be in a position where they would either have to A, retain salary, which David Poile has never done in a trade since the option to retain salary came into existence, or B, make that a sweeter deal, so to speak, by throwing in a draft pick or a prospect or both. And I honestly think the path of least resistance might just be to buy him out, which is not an easy thing to do when you consider how long Kyle Turris will be on the salary cap because of that. And I know that Kyle is excited about the opportunity to come back and play a full season under John Hines, who gave him a lot more responsibility when the coaching change occurred. But I just think at this point, Kyle Turris is just not a fit for this organization. And which is hard to say, because I think Kyle, you know, has done his best to be a professional through all of this. But perhaps this is hyperbole, and both of you can stop me if this is the case, but if the Predators were to buy out Kyle Turris, I think you can make an argument that it is the worst trade in Predators history. And again, that might be hyperbolic, but I think an argument could be made to justify that.
I would have a hard time disagreeing with you.
Well, hard to say because there was production in the immediate aftermath, but let's save that for another day because that let's see what happens first.
Yes.
Because I do think it's an interesting discussion. When you've been around for as long as David Poile has, there's a lot of trades that you to evaluate for sure. He's made more than one. But Adam, I think it also reflects that this is a buyer's market. If you are a buyer, there's going to be some opportunities to get some talented players, some players that don't have great contracts, players who are available because their team may not have as much to spend or is up against the cap or both. But the question is, how many buyers are out there given the landscape of the league, not knowing how many fans you're going to be able to have and all of that stuff? I think that's the really tricky thing that every team has to deal with, including the Predators.
I look at the buyers, honestly, as the teams that have a lot of cap space. You know, I look at the Detroit Red Wings, for example, who last month made a trade with the New York Rangers to take on the final year of Mark Stahl's contract and receive the second-round pick in return. You know, I think of the Ottawa Senators. I think of the New Jersey Devils. I think of these teams that are flush with cap space as those teams that can take on these bad contracts and perhaps take advantage and weaponize our cap space, as we like to say. You know, the perfect example last year with PK Subban. I mean, the Devils were the only team willing to take on PK Subban's full contract, which is why the Predators decided to trade with the Devils. And the return for PK Subban was okay. They did get some second round picks. They did get Jeremy Davies, but you know, perhaps the return may not have been as high as the Predators would have liked, considering the fact that the Devils were the only team willing to take on the whole deal. But you know, there are a lot of teams that have to make some really tough decisions. I mean, we've already seen some interesting trades over the past few days. I think of yesterday, the Minnesota Wild, for example, made two separate trades with the San Jose Sharks. The first one involving Ryan Donato and the second one involving Devin Dubnyk. You know, you look at the Arizona Coyotes, for example, or shopping Oliver Ekman-Larsson. And reports say that the Canucks and the Bruins are the two teams that are interested. Actually, there is just now a report from Oliver Ekman-Larsson's agent saying, quote, "We think the best option for a trade is before free agency. If no deal by Friday, Oliver is staying in Arizona." So that puts the pressure on the Canucks and the Bruins otherwise to make it work. So I am very interested to see which players will be moved. I think players that don't have a lot of term are going to be valuable. I think players on 1 or 2 year deals with reasonable cap hits are going to be a lot easier to move, more so than the players with term, which is usually what happens. But even under these circumstances with the flat cap and financial uncertainty for the next several years, you know, term can scare off a lot of teams.
Yes, I think we've laid it out. There's a lot of people looking to sell some players, but there aren't a lot of those guys do have a lot of term, and there aren't a lot of buyers right now. So with that, we're going to take a break. When we come back, more with Adam Vingan from The Athletic talking NHL draft tonight. We'll get more focused on the Predators. Who might be there at number 11? Who are the names we need to be looking at? And is there any way that the Predators come out knowing that they're going to lose Mikhail Granlund and Craig Smith? What is the plan? Is it just going to be the youth, or will they possibly make a move for some of these guys that we've been talking about? Is the right move there for them for somebody that would make an impact on their roster? Stay tuned. We'll discuss it when we come back here on Darren Donick and Chase. Remember, Mike Vrabel at 12:30, and we will keep an eye on any NFL news that comes down the pike regarding their situation. Stay tuned. We're coming back.
Yeah.
little soccer note, Nashville SC is in action tonight as they take on Minnesota United FC at 7:30. Catch all the action on ESPN 94.9, starting with pregame coverage at 7:15. So you heard about our baseball coverage with Mookie and the Dodgers. We've got it all covered here on The Game. We're here talking with Adam Vingan from The Athletic. The NHL draft is tonight. We've got a lot of coverage on our station throughout the evening, led by the one and only Chase McCabe, who has questions for Adam. Chase?
I do. I have questions, and Adam has answers, or maybe it's just when you think you have all the answers, Adam changes the questions. We'll see. But anyway, Adam Vingan here with us. I read your piece that you put out today of the 15 hypothetical trades that the Predators could consider, and I'm gonna be honest with you, I laughed at a lot of these that people submitted, because it did seem like, and you referenced this in the article, out of franchise mode in NHL 20. But of those trades, and just to give people an idea, there were some in there: Matthias Ekholm going to Toronto for William Nylander. There were a few with that. UC Saros to Calgary for Johnny Gaudreau. You had Kyle Turris for James Neal to Edmonton, straight up. So different type of trades that people threw out there. Of any of those, Duchesne for PK Subban, of any of those, Adam, was there one that you saw that people submitted that you go, okay, that actually could work?
Yeah, so just to give you a sense of what this story was about, we've been doing this at the NHL team for the last couple of weeks, where we solicit trade proposals, hypothetical trade proposals from subscribers, and then analyze them. So I received more than 40. I picked 15 because I didn't want it to get too long. And Chase, you read off some of them. There was actually one that I thought was kind of interesting. My colleague in Philadelphia, Charlie O'Connor, actually thought it was an intriguing idea. I'm not sure the Predators would do it, but this came from reader Josh F., who suggested that the Predators trade Kyle Turris and Matthias Ekholm to the Flyers for James Van Riemsdyk and Shane Gostisbehere. And I thought it was interesting. First of all, Ekholm in this story was the most mentioned player going the other way in the trade, which is interesting because he is a very valuable player, but he is 30 years old and has 2 years left on his contract. Who knows what the expansion draft could mean for the future of Matthias Ekholm in Nashville. So perhaps they're trying to get some value for him while they still can. And my colleague Charlie liked the idea because, one, it would save the Flyers cap space because more money would be going to Nashville than to Philadelphia. And James Van Riemsdyk is the type of player that I think that the Predators could use, you know, a power forward who does his best work in front of the net. But he's got 3 years left on a contract with $7 million. That's not a great contract either. I mean, it is shorter than Turris's remaining contract, but it is more expensive, albeit by just $1 million. I actually like the idea of trade between the two teams involving Shane Gostisbehere. I think Shane Gostisbehere could be a really good third-pairing defenseman for the Predators. In a more of an offensive-minded defenseman, a power play specialist, had a big year a few years ago, but has been tailing off. You know, would provide more experience on the third pair than, say, a Jared Sinorty, for example. So I wonder if there might be a deal out there that works for both teams and involves Gostisbehere. But I thought the idea of Turris and Ekholm to the Flyers for Van Riemsdyk as Gostisbehere was probably the one trade of the 15 I received that I feel like could work in real life.
Before I get to the draft tonight, I do have a few more when it comes to NHL players and potential moves. Now, Bobby Ryan was bought out, and you and I texted about this a little bit. It would have to be, to me, like a 1 year, $1 million, very low risk type deal. But is that something that you might look at if you're David Poile?
I think Bobby Ryan is the most valuable of the buyout players. And so far that list includes, of course, Bobby Ryan, Michael Grabner, Jack Johnson, now Justin Abdelkader, Carl Alsner. Forgive me if I didn't say Henrik Lundqvist, or if I did already. So there are some interesting names out there. Bobby Ryan, I think, could still be an effective player for a team, whichever team. The Predators have had mixed success with the one-year, $1 million contract, or the $1 million, $1.05 million contract specifically. We can think of Mike Ribeiro from several years ago, Scott Hartnell, Cody Hodgson.
Derek David Roy Doyle, would be another one.
Derek Roy. So the Predators are – David Poile is not afraid to take on these reclamation projects. I'm not sure, if Bobby Ryan is the answer. But of the players who have been bought out, if I were to say which one of these would be the best fit for Nashville, I would say Bobby Ryan.
So in the next couple of days with the draft, do you believe – this is a two-part question. Do you believe the Predators will trade away – a roster player, and or do you believe that they will acquire a roster player?
That's a good question. So the first one is, will they trade away a roster player?
Yes.
That's a good question. I honestly don't know. I mean, that's not the answer you want to hear.
that's but why I asked I it.
Could, yes, I know, but it's, there are some interesting players that the Predators have that could be valuable to other teams. And I know I've been beating this drum since last summer, but I think now is the time to trade Nick Bonino. I wonder if perhaps he could be on the move. This is purely hypothetical. But when I look at roster players that could be valuable to other teams, I think Nick Bonino is top on my list. When you consider his contract and what he can provide, and the lack of centers in the free agent market, so will there be a roster player moved in the next 2 days? I'm going to say no, but I won't count it out this week.
Okay, fair
and
enough.
The second part was, will they bring in a roster player?
Yeah,
I think it's my guess would be if I had to pick between which one was more likely, I would say that they trade a roster player, then they acquire one.
I think I would agree with that.
Really? I think I would go the other way, unless you count Kyle Turris as, well, I guess it would
depend
if he
Turris.
Trades him, if it's a trade or it's a buyout. I think both of those are possible.
Sure.
But I think it's also very possible that they bargain shop and find somebody who, and we've tossed out a number of different names. I don't know if any of them are the fit that they're looking for. But if they see a bargain, I think they're bargain hunters for sure. If there's a flyer that they can take, not a Philadelphia flyer necessarily, but somebody that could be insurance for Eli Tolvanen or Philip Tomasino, guys that they would love to see take the reins and jump in there. But I think you got to have plan B. And guys who, either on a $1 million flyer or a player that you acquire his services and don't have to pay full price. In other words, the other team picks up some salary. I think that could be inviting for them if you can get them on a cheap price because a team is desperate to get rid of them. It's a little bit, if they can find somebody else's Kyle Turris,
right,
that is a better fit for them. In other words, he's on the wing and not a centerman, because I think they have plenty of centers. I do not agree with the Nick Bonino thing. I agree, Adam, that he probably has more trade value than most of their guys. He's a very attractive guy, but I just don't think they can part with him right now. I think they need him desperately if they're still trying to win, which I think they are.
And that is the most difficult question that the Predators have to answer this offseason. How do they thread the needle between wanting to get these prospects into NHL roles, like Eli Tolvanen, like Jakob Trenin, like Rem Pitlick, and remaining competitive? Because I personally believe that if they were to just let their free agents go, let Granlund go, let Smith go, let Yannick Weber go, let Colin Blackwell go, for example, and just fill in those spots with all of the aforementioned players, I think the Predators could still be a playoff team, but they are not a contender, a legitimate Stanley Cup contender. So I think there is risk in going in, all in, excuse me, on youth, and that's why I feel like the Predators, to your point, Willie, need to find some sort of proven NHL player who can take the pressure off those players. You know, that's why I was a bit surprised personally, not completely surprised, but a bit surprised that the Predators closed the door on Craig Smith, because I think that, for example, if Elie Tolvanen was given the right wing slot on the second line with Matthew Shane, and after 10 games was not producing, you can easily put Craig Smith in that position and expect results. So I think you need a player like that who can jump up in the lineup and play a bigger role, if these prospects are not ready for prime time.
I agree, and I think they're going to look for that guy, but not pay the price that I think Craig Smith feels like he deserves and is going to get on the market. That's what I'd be curious to know is, as they parted ways, was it more, we have to have 3 years, and so Craig Smith's representation closed the door, or was it the Predators looking to move on? I just think they think Craig Smith, they hold him in pretty high regard. They know exactly what he brings to the table. I just think that Craig Smith and his group feel like the market will be solid for him, and I think that sort of remains to be seen.
I don't blame him for that.
I think Craig Smith is going to have a lot of interest. When you look at, yes, 3 years might be a bit long for a 31-year-old player, but as we know, Craig Smith takes really good care of himself. He hasn't really sustained any significant injuries or missed a significant amount of time because of injury over the course of his career, at least not in the past 5 years that I've been here. So exactly what you're getting from Craig Smith. I think he's going to be attractive to a lot of teams. I think he's going to get his 3 years, and I think he might get a little bit of a raise. I mean, I think the Predators would have had to give him a pay cut, but I think he's going to get a raise.
So back to the draft. This team has obviously been rewarded with their drafting of defensemen, and then obviously what they've gotten out of Pekka over the last decade at goaltender. You wrote in The Athletic that at 11th overall, and Corey Pronman, who's the your draft expert there at The Athletic, Yaroslav Askarov, a Russian goaltender, going to the Predators at number 11 overall. He's 18 years old. Obviously, with the NHL draft, you don't see these guys right away, but 11th overall, I mean, I would think you'd see him pretty quickly in the NHL.
But what's pretty quickly for a goalie?
Right. I mean, that's
3 years from now?
Yeah, that's my question. How he could help this team in the near future if he is, in fact, the draft pick.
Well, you think about some of the other Russian goaltenders, for example, that have been drafted recently. You know, you can go back to 2015, the Capitals drafted Ilya Samsonov, a Russian goaltender with the 22nd pick. That was in 2015, and he made his NHL debut this past season. So that's, what, 4 years? That's one example. Ilya Sorokin, the Islanders' next goaltender, expected to be the Islanders' next goaltender, was a third-round pick in 2014, and he just signed with the Islanders when the league returned to play. So, you know, goaltenders, you know, especially those who are playing in Russia, playing in the KHL, they tend to take a couple of years. I mean, I remember being in Washington, not a goaltender, but I remember being in Washington when Evgeny Kuznetsov finally arrived. It took several years for Evgeny Kuznetsov to finally leave Russia and come to the NHL. Askarov has 2 years left on his KHL contract, so I think the earliest you would see him is the 2023 season in North America. But listening to Corey Pronman, listening to Scott Wheeler, who is another one of our draft experts, listening to Craig Button of TSN, they are heaping praise on Askarov. I think he is too good of a goaltender to pass up on if he is available at 11, simply because I am not convinced that UC Saros or Connor Ingram are the future franchise goaltenders of this organization. I think they could be a solid tandem together, but I don't see Saros or Ingram necessarily becoming the next Pecorine who plays 60 games a year for 10 years and you never have to worry about it. I think if you can get the best player available at your spot and the best player available is Ostarov, I don't think you should hesitate to take him.
But what you're not saying, Adam, which you know, is there are a ton of great goalies that are not first-round draft picks, right?
Yeah.
It tends to be easier to find the goalies because they develop over a longer period of time, that 2 or 3 years into the development, you figure out that the guy that was drafted in the eighth round, which doesn't exist anymore, a guy named Pecorine or others, you know, it just happens that they 2 or 3 years later, it looks completely different than it did on draft night. I do not subscribe to your theory or Corey Pronman's. I just don't think there's any way they're going to use a first-round pick on a goalie here, even if this kid is special. Because there are some great first-round pick goalies. But for every one, I think there's 2 or 3 busts, right? And you're like, why did they take the goalie? It is such an interesting position to study over time. I think there's way too much risk in taking a goalie with that pick. I think you have a clearer picture of what a forward or defenseman is going to look like.
There are a lot of really intriguing forwards who could be available to the Predators at number 11. Seth Jarvis, Jack Quinn.
I'm hearing those names a lot. When you read the mock drafts and stuff, I think Jack Quinn is a guy to keep your eye on. Jarvis would be another.
Yeah, and those two are proven goal scorers in their respective junior leagues. Jack Quinn in the OHL and Seth Jarvis in the Western Hockey League. So you're right, Willie. There is a lot more risk involved in taking a goaltender. I mean, I look back at the 7 goaltenders that have been taken in the first round since 2010. And of course the crown of the jewel of that seven member group is Andrei Vasilevskiy. But there's also Jack Campbell, who was drafted 10 years ago and is still trying to find a regular role in the NHL. Malcolm Subban is another goaltender who definitely has not lived up to the hype of being a first round draft pick. So there is a lot more risk, and it is likelier that a forward drafted in that spot or defenseman is ready to play in the NHL quicker than a goaltender. I just wonder if Ostarov is as special as people say he is. I think you have to, as Jeff Kelce said last week, they would certainly consider it, and I think they should.
Well, let's look at history as well. These are the same guys that have been doing the Predators draft for a long time here, but the Predators are an 0-for-2 with 2 whiffs when they have taken a goalie in the first round, right? I mean, it was not good at all. They got absolutely nothing, not even, you know, a cup of coffee or win here and there. Brian Finley, way back in, 1999, I think he was the second guy, the second draft. And then his brother ended up being a better goalie.
Yeah.
Chet Pickard was a first-round pick, and he never played a single game. So I just think that's a tough
– Brian Finley played 2 games for the Predators. And
yeah,
one
look,
in 2002 and one
look
in
at the stats. And look at the stats of those games. There was one that he'd like to forget. He had
an 8.15 save percentage in 2 games.
Yeah, the only reason he got into the game was because I think Chris Mason got injured in the warm-up, and it didn't go well. I think it was against Florida. It was one of the roughest games I've ever seen. It was tough. So history would suggest that they will shy away from the goalie here. But we will find out tonight. That's the beauty of it. Adam, we will enjoy it together tonight. Enjoy your coverage. We're looking forward to it, and thanks for joining us today.
Of course, guys. Be good. Thanks.
All right, Adam Vingan from The Athletic. You can read his coverage, of course, on the Predators draft. Make sure you tune in tonight on 102.5 The Game. Chase will have his coverage with Justin Bradford. Of course, the Predators have their thing going. It's going to be a big gathering down at Bridgestone Arena. It'll be nice to actually see some people in the Lexus Lounge and enjoy the draft with the group, with the social distancing and the masks and everything. But we'll have some people down there, so there's a lot to look forward to. It should be a fun night as the Predators pick number 11. If they stay in that spot, I guess there's always a possibility of moving up, moving down. But I think they will pick at 11. That's my vibe.
I think so,
and,
too.
Are you with me? There's no way they're picking a goalie, are they?
I don't. I think that David knows they need to get a player that can help them sooner rather than later. And you and Adam make great points on goalies. You know, just how quick can a goalie get here? Plus, I'm not ready to write off UC Saros yet. Anyway,
I got a higher ceiling for Saros. I think there's a good chance he becomes a guy you can win a lot of games with.
This team, in my opinion, they need to either find a replacement for whether it's Ekholm or Ellis or whoever in the next few years at defense, or they need to find another goal scoring forward that can help them, a top six guy that you could see in the next couple years, you know, like we could see with Tomasino. I mean, Tomasino just got drafted and we're already talking about him potentially being here. So, and same with Tolvanen. So I think that you got to look for a guy like that at 11.
All right. When we come back, we will turn our attention to what's coming next hour. Mike Vrabel will be joining the media at 12:30. We'll have that for you here. Still no news. Best I can tell about any sanctions, any findings from the NFL. I'm disappointed if that's going to be the case when he takes the mic at 12:30. Not even a thumbs up that you can go back to the facility. Maybe we'll find out more in the next hour or so. But we'll discuss. We'll bring you up to speed in a moment. You're listening to Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Donick and Chase continues. We count down to Mike Vrabel at 12:30. A very important press conference coming up. You can hear it right here. So, Chase, let's get people up to speed on what has happened if you're just getting into the flow. Most of you know by now this has kind of been part of our routine as you check to see if there's any positive tests. None for a second straight day. Good news.
Yeah, I think this is fantastic news. That hopefully will lead the Titans to being able to report back to St. Thomas Sports Park tomorrow to get ready for the Bills. All indications are that that game will go on as scheduled, and hopefully that will be the only scheduling adjustments that the Titans will have to make this year. But they're not going to have the 10 guys that we've been talking about that are on the COVID-19 list. You know, a list that includes Jeffrey Simmons, Kamale Correa, Adam Humphries, Daquan Jones, many others that have tested positive for the coronavirus. So they won't have them this week. At least all indications are they won't have them this week. So maybe Mike Vrabel will address some of that today of what the process is going to be. We know that the NFL might be changing up how they do free agency. So what does that mean for a long snapper? What does that mean for a fullback? Yeah, you're gonna. They have 46 players, I believe, on the active roster right now. Potentially less, but I think that's what I counted with these guys that are on the list. So they have some holes to fill to try and get through Buffalo. And Buffalo's a pretty good team. I mean, Buffalo has shown us that they are in the right spot. They have earned that spot. They're 4-0. They're leading the division. I was one of those people that were like, I think they're good, but are they great? Are they really capable of winning the division? And so far through the first month of the season, I would say so. So the Titans will have their work cut out for them, but this is a talented group, and they knew that this could be a possibility. This is the hand they've been dealt, and so now they have to try and figure out how to beat them.
Well, that'll be an interesting thing. I think Mike Vrabel likes being the underdog a little bit. I think that could be fun. to take that role, because if they're as depleted as we think they're going to be, they're going to be a pretty significant underdog as a 3-0 home dog, right? Don't we think that that's the likely scenario here? I don't know what the line will be when it comes out, but
well, hang on, I'll tell you. I bet because
is there a line on the game right now? Not knowing,
I think
about
so.
The availability of all these critical players.
There is. Titans are a 1-point home dog, according to Vegas Insider. Now there are some books that have not given a line, so I think you have to take that with a grain of salt. According to this, they opened as a 6.5-point dog. A 6.5-point favorite, I should say. That was when
a 6.5-point favorite over a 4-0 team.
Yeah, but I think this line was probably done, you know, before all this happened.
I would have been stunned. Like, even if both teams were at full strength, I would think 6.5 is a high number.
I agree.
When you're playing a 4-0 team.
So they're currently a 1-point dog, but I think that obviously could change one way or another in the next few days.
The other thing, I still continue to be, there hasn't been any hint about findings from the league about the investigation. How long do you have to wait to know your fate? I guess there's nothing that keeps it. They can do whatever they want, I guess. But I would just love to have this behind me if I'm the Titans. You found what you found. Is there any what information is out there that you haven't gotten yet?
Well, I wonder if Vrabel will address that. If he'll just say, you know, the league has told us that this is happening or what have you. I mean, I don't know. But I also wouldn't be surprised if we don't hear anything from the league, because that, I mean, they're not always forthcoming with information. I wish they would be. I think we both have said that they should be in this situation of what's going to happen and what did they find, what's going to change. I mean, we've seen a memo, but the memo doesn't tell you the whole story. So, you know, who knows? But I mean, it would make sense to me for the NFL to say something and then allow Vrabel to speak, but at least right now, it looks like in about 40 minutes or so, Mike Vrabel will take the podium and he'll be the first one to talk about this situation, and we won't hear from the NFL.
The memo that you just referred to was pretty fascinating. Ian Rappaport and some others shared it with everybody on Twitter, so I read it like I think a lot of you listening. But the theme was very clear, without mentioning the Titans at all. It sounded like there was a lot of blame being placed on the Titans for not following the protocols, which would fall in line with Adam Schefter's view of things. When he reported it over the weekend, you know, he was quite accusatory of the Titans for not following the protocols. Now, that's coming from the league, right?
Right.
The Titans dispute that. We'll wait and see how it falls out. But here's what the memo says. Our testing regimen is the most comprehensive of any sport or business. This is from Roger Goodell to all of the teams. Our contact tracing program exceeds similar efforts anywhere in the world, and our protocols have been shown to stop the spread of the virus when and where it inevitably appears. We can say this because since the start of training camp, there have been positive tests on most clubs. But other than one case of spread, and I don't know why they didn't just mention it, you know, other than one case of spread, the virus has been contained and operations have been disruptive. So basically that's telling you, we feel like our protocols are good and only one team has not made it work. Now, that sounds to me, the tone of that sounds to me like, if you'd have followed your protocols, you'd have been okay.
Right.
And this, so when he writes this memo, they've already conducted their investigation, right?
Right.
So that doesn't bode well for the Titans to me, that part of it. Because the next line is, the protocols do not implement themselves.
Yeah, you have to implement them. And what's going to be even more damning in this situation is, if we get through the next few days and the Chiefs and Patriots have zero additional positive tests outside of Cam Newton for the Patriots, Jordan Tamu for the Chiefs, that should tell you something. That tells you that, what, you know, they listen to the protocols, they adhere to the protocols, once a positive test happened and it didn't spread. So where do the Titans go wrong? And that's the answer that I want. I want somebody, whether it's the Titans or the league, to get up in front of a podium and tell me, this is what the Titans did wrong, this is how they're going to fix it.
But I don't know if it's that simple. That's what we need to find out from the
Titans. Or were the protocols not right? You know, because
that's part of it too.
You can make the argument that after the Titans outbreak, that the league tightened up on things, because they did, and that's why it worked for the Chiefs and the Patriots. And so then the league should say, well, hey, we failed. We thought we had the right protocols, but the Titans followed the protocols that we put in front of them, and they didn't work. So that's on us. Either way, whether the Titans were in the wrong or the league was in the wrong or somewhere in the middle, I want to know the answer to that.
There is really nothing in this memo that is at all sympathetic to the Titans. There are a lot of things that you try to read between the lines. It seems like they're directed at something, and maybe we're reading into it a little too closely, but it seems like they're directed to some of the things that we know the Titans had happen to them, right? A player from the practice squad contracted the virus, had to be put on the COVID list. We know about assistant coach Shane Bowen. So let's listen, think about that as you listen to what the memo says. The protocols do not implement themselves, however, and our progress thus far cannot lead to complacency. Complacency is our shared opponent. I don't mind that line at all. I think all of us have to think about that going forward. We must reinforce our commitment to full adherence to our mandatory safety protocols and best practices. The consequences of rescheduling or even missing games are obvious. Our fans will be deprived of games. Competitive inequities will be introduced to our season. Players will not be paid for games not played, and clubs will similarly suffer financial consequences. And then in bold, as we have said before, act as if every person you come in contact with has a COVID infection and take appropriate precautions. Now, I wonder why that's in bold. Is that something, because in Adam Schefter's report, that was implied that Shane Bowen had come in contact with somebody who had it and didn't say anything and came into work, right? Which he wouldn't be the first person in our society that's happened to a lot of people, right? But if that happened, that would be an issue, right? And so I think about that when I read that sentence in bold in the memo. I believe that's the only bold sentence in the entire memo. True?
Yeah, I agree with that.
It's a two-page memo. That's the only sentence in bold.
And it's true. And that's where I think that whether it's the Titans or the NFL, somebody needs to come out and say, if that's the case, I want to hear somebody say, hey, Shane Bowen knew he had come in contact with somebody, he came to work anyway, that's been dealt with. But that was what it was. If that's the case, then again, we deserve to know.
So then the second page of the memo discusses some of the things that they kicked around in terms of their protocols, and they get very specific on these. I don't think we have time to read all of them, but there's a lot of things kicked around, but there is no definitive commitment to change the protocols here, which I think is also telling.
Right.
Right?
Well, and I'm hoping somebody will ask Mike
Vrabel. They might turn the screws, they might increase it, but I don't know if they will, right? There's no commitment in this memo that tells you that our protocols were messed up and we need to change this. There's no admission of guilt at all on the league's part.
Right, and that may very well be the case, because maybe the protocols do work if they're followed. That's what we're trying to figure out. Did the protocols not work, or were they not followed correctly? And that's where we have to find that answer, because if they weren't followed correctly, then the NFL shouldn't have to change the protocols, because they're like, well, the other teams, all 31 other teams have followed them right, and it's been fine. Cam Newton was he tested positive, but then they followed the correct protocols. He was isolated, and the Patriots were able to play a game. It was just moved one day. So that's probably the biggest question in all of this, were the protocols wrong, or were they not followed? Nate says on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, I don't think we're going to hear that the league is in the wrong or what the Titans did or didn't do. The league keeps details in-house and won't let them out unless it's leaked. I think
well, this is leaked. This is a memo that was leaked.
Right. I think we're going to find out. Somebody's going to break it, whether it's Rapoport or Schefter or any of those guys, Graziano, Diana Russini. I mean, they're somebody is going to get a hold of this, and it's going to come out. That's just my theory.
Just to hit some highlights, because these are, again, things to keep in mind based on Schefter's report and based on things that we found out over the course of last week. Here are the discussed things in reviewed changes to the protocols. Again, reviewed and discussion, nothing, no commitment to it. Longer onboarding process for free agent tryouts. That comes to mind, Maben, right? Signing somebody to the practice squad, and he got it, so... Is that a discussion based on what happened there? Bans on gatherings outside the club facility, limitations on the number of tryouts permitted per week, and an implementation of a league-wide video monitoring system to ensure compliance. So Big Brother is watching.
They're always watching.
The mandate that all staff and players wear PPE while in a club facility and on travel at all times. So... that sets the table for Mike Vrabel at 12:30, and there's still 30 minutes. Will there be an announcement from the league before the Vrabel press conference? Oftentimes, I think you work in cahoots with the league in what time your coach talks, right? Knowing that maybe the announcement's coming at noon. I don't know. I'm speculating. I would, if I'm the Titans, I'd be kind of bummed out that my coach has to go and face the media before we have answers to obvious questions like, is the facility open, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Otherwise, he's going to get grilled, and he's going to get all kinds of questions that he may or may not be able to answer at this time, even if some of the answers he might know, but he may not be willing to share them yet.
Sure.
Because they haven't been made public. We'll see.
We'll find out in 29 minutes.
Yes, so we'll have it for you here on 102.5 The Game. Stay tuned. We're coming back with the second half of Darren, Donick, and Chase next.
I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play and win from the comfort of your own home with hundreds of slot games and all of the table games you love with real cash prizes. Right now, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 for new users. It's all at SpinQuest.com. That's SPINQUEST.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.